You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool radio program, and welcome to Confederate History Month. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday, April 5th, and we kick off our annual salute to the South here on the Political Cesspool, the only mainstream talk radio program doing such a thing here in this contemptible day and age. It's great to be with you tonight. We are going to have a fun show. The second hour of each broadcast during the month of April will be dedicated in service to Confederate History and Heritage Month. But before we get to that, we've got much more to bring to your attention. Of course, we are making news in Charleston, South Carolina, one of the major cities of the Confederacy, just last week over an interview we did in Confederate History Month from years prior with the former Speaker of the State Senate there in South Carolina. He's currently the Lieutenant Governor of the Palmetto State. Now, I saw this was written in response to that. I asked myself, the person opines, why it's okay for the NAACP to be pro-black and dedicated to the advancement of colored people, but vile and racist for the political cesspool to be pro-white. The logic of leftists is so flawed. These folks aren't as smart and educated as they think. They should be pointed out that left-leaning thinkers, their assumptions are derived from ignorance and are always false and makes them appear foolish. Well, certainly I share the sentiments of that writer. And with that being said, you know, we are not alone anymore in talking about these issues. WorldNet Daily wrote an excellent piece this week, "A Nation's Attempt to Survive Isn't Racism." I'd like to read just an excerpt from that. This is what the writer has put on the paper with her pen. It may surprise some Americans to learn that almost one quarter of people living in Switzerland are foreigners. Even so, just over 50% voted last month to cap immigration, which unchecked could leave indigenous Swiss a minority in 50 years. Newsweek's headline over the stories was typical: Switzerland's sudden fear of immigrants. The German publication Spiegel Online also wrote about scaremongering. The enlightened reader's thought bubble is now supposed to register the word racism, but was it really fear of immigrants that drove sufficient number of Swiss to the polls to check their own demographic extinction as a recognizable culture and nation state? Or was it merely an instinct to survive as a recognizable culture and nation state? And this writer goes on to put forth one of the most excellent pieces I've read in recent years. And she's asking, what's happening? You take a state like California, where waves of mainly illegal aliens from Mexico have turned the population to nearly 40% Hispanic Latino. In Los Angeles County, the figure jumps to 48%. The next largest ethnic group is non-Hispanic white, whatever that is, 27%. In 1960, not long before the writer was born, non-Hispanic whites were 82% of the county. What you're looking at, she writes for WorldNet Daily, is population replacement, and it's taking place well inside the span of one lifetime. Such population replacement is underway everywhere. Non-assimilable blacks have become entrenched with or without amnesty, but we the people have never voted for it. Is it fear and scaremongering to point this out? Is it racism to oppose the demographic obliteration of nations that are clearly underway? So what this letter is doing, ladies and gentlemen, information is saying, look, the Swiss people went and voted to maintain their cultural identity. It's not racism or hatred or fear of other people to want to have a part of this world where your culture remains dominant. And I'm going to talk it over with that to Keith Alexander. But what I'm saying here, I think, Keith, is that the political cesspool can take credit in helping foster this debate. You know, it wasn't 2 years ago where WorldNet Daily would have never touched issues like this. And now they have arguably one of the greatest writers, or one of the most well-known writers when it comes to black-on-white crime under their employee, Colin Faraday, who's been a guest on this show. The political cesspool, I think, can take credit for helping foster this debate. We're not alone anymore. This network, WorldNet Daily, and others are beginning to talk about this in a clear, concise way.
We rush in where angels fear to tread, right, James? I guess, or where wise men are. You fill it in, but nonetheless, we're blazing the trail. What this needs to be said about this article primarily is this. Every nation, Switzerland, the United States, has laws in place which, if enforced, would prevent this racial and ethnic displacement of the native stock of the nation from occurring. The problem is all of our political elite are either intentional or go-along, get-along type globalists. And as globalists, they don't believe in borders. They don't believe in borders to separate people or to keep out goods or labor or anything else. So consequently, they're not going to enforce the borders of Switzerland or the United States or England or you name the nation, particularly a white nation. Now, non-white nations like Mexico are still allowed to defend their borders, and you never hear discouraging words in the press about the draconian penalties that would face some poor hapless Guatemalan, for example, that stumbled across the Mexican border.
Well, look at Israel. Look at Israel, too, Keith.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Israel, of course, is the perfect example of, you know, a nation that maintains its ethnic and racial integrity. But, of course, we're supposed to never say a discouraging word about them, never point out the inconsistency between what the Jewish left in America does in the United States or recommend for the United States and what they tolerate and indeed encourage in the state of Israel.
Keith, if I could add this, certainly one of the mainstream commentators that were talking about this, these issues long before we, was Pat Buchanan. Of course, from Pat Buchanan, we drew our own inspiration, at least I did, and I know you as well. When I formed this show, I was a Buchanan, had worked for the Buchanan campaign previously, and wanted to carry on some of his ideas in any way that I could, and certainly this show provided an outlet. But he writes in a very recent column, I think 2 weeks ago, European man is an endangered species. This is, again, just a brief excerpt from Pat's incredible column. The century following the peaceful end of the Cold War and the liberation of the captive nations may witness population losses for Europe that exceed those of the two world wars combined and rival those of the Black Death. European man is an endangered species, Pat writes. He's dying out. By 2050, Russia, the fourth most populous nation in 1950, will be 15th behind Egypt and far behind Congo and Tanzania. The only Western nation in the top 14 in 2050 will be the USA, although most Americans by then will trace their ancestry back to Asia or Africa. Since 1914, all the great European empires, the British, the French, German, Russian, Italian, have vanished. All the great armies and navies have melted away. All are being invaded and repopulated by African, Asian, and Middle Eastern peoples they once ruled. And almost all of the native born populations of Europe are aging and dying and passing away. Is this how the world will end? As T.S. Eliot asked, not with the bang, but with the whimper. Pat asked something that's a very serious question. Do people of European descent want to live? Should they live? Do they deserve to live? These are questions that we think deserve a frank hearing. We give it to them here on the Political Festival. These are questions that do not need to be dismissed with the accusation, false accusation of racism when it talks about do our children, Keith, deserve to live? Well, let me answer that when we come back.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show. For that last break, I was about to toss it over to my colleague, my compatriot, Keith Alexander, to respond to Pat Buchanan's latest column, European Man is an Endangered Species. And you know, Keith, this is one of the things we always get hammered on by left-wing, anti-Christian, anti-white hate groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center, is that we dare to say in our statement of principles below the number one item is that we place our faith in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, is that, yes, we would like to see the white birth rate reach replacement level for fertility, and they use that as the number one exhibit in the case to present how racist we are, that white people should survive. Pat Buchanan thinks we should. I think we should. Is even mentioning that we ought to have the right to survive and that we are an endangered species or will shortly become one, is that racism now?
Well, the answer is a resounding no, of course. Why should white people be denied equality with every other race? Every other race is not only permitted but encouraged to have a strong sense of racial solidarity. Only white Gentiles are denied this right by the politically correct, and this incredible double standard, this incredible departure from equal treatment needs to be brought up and excoriated by whites whenever possible.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, you certainly couldn't agree with you more, Keith. And to that end, or in addition to that, I would say that the same people that would call us all sorts of dirty names for mentioning that, you know, hey, we deserve a right on this earth as well, are the same people that are behind stories like this next one I'd like to present for your examination, folks, in Australia. And this will happen soon here in America. You just wait and bet your bottom dollar. In Australia, the Supreme Court of Australia has recognized a third gender. You're not just a male or a female anymore. There is a third gender, according to Australia's top court. In healthier times, these people would have received intensive therapy for such a mental illness. But today, they are told that such sickness is not only normal, but a condition to be celebrated. So here's the quick story, and I'll toss it over to Keith. These are the people that would oppose us for such having such righteous
sentiments are also, on the other hand, when they're not attacking decent people like us, are putting forth things like this. Australia's High Court on Wednesday, this was last Wednesday, recognized the existence of a third non-specific gender that is neither male nor female in a landmark ruling that campaigners said will end years of discrimination. The High Court recognizes that a person may be neither male nor female and also permits the registration of a person's sex as non-specific. It said in a unanimous judgment, I'm overjoyed. Activist said, it's been a long time from start to the end, but this has been a great outcome. People will understand now that there's more options than just the binary. So while an individual might be male or female, they might be something more than that. And it goes on from there, and it talks about how people who were neither male nor female had been discriminated against all these years. And this will sound vaguely familiar, Keith. The Human Rights Law Center of Australia provided expert testimony in the case, and they said the court had, in its decision, rejected outdated notions of gender. I mean, you know, Keith, what can you say to something so obviously ridiculous? But it's not ridiculous because this is becoming law, and through its spread via the media, it will become something that will have to be debated. When otherwise, in a healthier society, we just reject this outright.
Well, what it shows, James, is that our institutions like the law and the medical community are both totally corrupt now, totally in the thrall and under the thumb of political correctness. You know, you've always been able to be both male and female. They call those people hermaphrodites. Now, what is this new third gender? You know, I'm waiting with bated breath to find out exactly what this option is. You're either one male or two female or three a hermaphrodite or four, maybe none of the above, a totally sexless person. I can't think of any other options, but apparently we need to look to the Supreme Court of Australia for guidance. Stranger than fiction.
They poured the mold, and they can dress it up with all the Orwellian doublespeak they can muster. I don't think any decent person is going to buy into such nonsense, but as usual, the ruling elite is going to force perversion like this against the will of the majority. And in the meantime, I might add, there's an equally obnoxious campaign taking place in Germany, of all places, Germany. It advocates unisex restrooms, apparently to make transsexuals and other perverts happy. And what's remarkable about this campaign is that it's being led in part and funded in part by the Evangelical Church of Germany. The campaign is called One Door is Enough. And as we wrote on the blog, it seems all the time the West manages to reach new lows.
Well, when the church gets so totally corrupted that they basically mistake liberalism for righteousness or Christianity, then you know we're in the last days, as far as I'm concerned. This is the idea of liberal Christianity is an oxymoron. It's like holy sin. There's no such thing. Liberalism is the enemy of every traditional religious faith: Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, anything. Okay, it is a separate religion, a religion of humanism. And it is the enemy. And any time you try to embrace the enemy, it reminds me of that old tale about the woman that found the freezing snake outside her door, picked it up, took it to her breast, and it bit her. And it was a poisonous snake, and as she was dying, she said, "How could you do this to me?" And the snake said, "Silly woman, didn't you know I was a snake?" Well, that's what's going to happen to every religion that tries to embrace liberalism. Liberalism will be revived, will bite the religion and kill the religion.
Well, Keith, I got one more for you, and that is the H word. Maybe you've heard of this, maybe you haven't. But the newspaper of record has made it official that the word homosexual is now outdated and offensive, much like take a deep breath, the N word is, or the word colored once was. It's important that the listeners of Political Cesspool be kept up to date on these matters, but so this is the New York Times. To most ears, they write, it probably sounds inoffensive. a little outdated and clinical, but innocuous enough, homosexual. But that five-syllable word has never been more loaded, more deliberately used, and to the ears of many gays and lesbians, more pejorative. Homosexual has the ring of colored now in the way your grandmother might have used the term. Some gay rights advocates have declared the term off-limits, homosexual, Keith. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, or GLAAD, has put homosexual on its list of offensive terms and has persuaded the Associated Press, whose style book is widely used by many news organizations, to restrict use of the word, homosexual, the new N-word.
Well, what it is, it's Orwellian newspeak. It is political correctness is the most totalitarian, tyrannical system devised by modern man. It is, you know, what this is showing you is that there's a real need for secession. Red State America and any region of the world that is populated by clear-thinking, rational people needs to secede from places like New York and Blue State America, where this nonsense is taken seriously. I don't want to take nonsense seriously. I have enough trouble coping with reality as it is and to start jousting with windmills like the new definition of homosexuality. I don't want to walk around that minefield. I refuse to. And, you know, we just need to, you know, ignore this. Just like everything else we hear from the left.
We'll be back right after this, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. We're just getting started tonight.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQonline.com and click on subscribe now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQonline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, in just 30 minutes' time, we're going to kick off Confederate History Month 2014 here on PPC. You're not going to want to miss that. Our debut guest for the Confederate History Month series this year will be Wilburn Sprayberry, who's making his first ever appearance on the show, and on Confederate History Month, no less. So stay tuned for that. We got a great topic of conversation. I tell you what, I'm looking forward to the second hour tonight more than I can possibly tell you. It's really going to be great, and it's not just for Southerners. We have a worldwide audience, an audience that grows each and every week, people all around the globe tuning in. Confederate History Month isn't just for Southerners, folks, is it, Keith? And I'll let you answer that question and then go in directly into the one of the topics you wanted to bring forth tonight.
Now, I think that the whole world needs to empathize with the South and with Confederate sympathizers, because it used to be common knowledge among foreigners, in other words, non-Americans, non-U.S. citizens, that the Confederacy was onto something. For example, I remember watching those Spaghetti Westerns by Sergio Leone that starred Clint Eastwood. In every one of those three, I think it was For a Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the Confederates were portrayed in a positive light. That was typically the way Hollywood movies and foreign movies portrayed the South up until the same Civil Rights Movement came on board. Now, why were the Confederates portrayed in a positive light? Well, the Confederates were the first group of people to defy the federal governmental leviathan of America. We were the first people that tried to stop America from projecting itself and its power on other people, us, and other people, like people in the Middle East, people in Europe, people in Asia, that do not like the Jewish Zionist-run American government to impose its will upon them, look nostalgically at the South and say, wouldn't it be a different world if the South had won? It would have been an entirely different world, James, because if the South had won the Civil War, you'd have two countries that had half the wealth, half the number of people, half the natural resources, and half the power that the current United States has, and as a result, neither of those countries would have been inclined to try to project itself as a power player in world affairs. We would have been more like Australia rather than what the United States is. In fact, I think that if the South had won the Civil War, there is absolutely no question in my mind that the United States of America would not have been involved in either World War One or World War II, James. What do you think about that?
Well, Keith, it certainly lends itself to interpretation. We know the catastrophic effect that those two world wars had on our people and truly humanity itself. Perhaps you're right. I guess we'll never know because we were beaten. But
well, let's think about it. Let's follow this thread to the end. Let's look at World War One. The United States got involved because of the meddling Woodrow Wilson, who would never have been elected president had it not been for the phenomenon of the solid South. In other words, the South voting Democratic. They vote for a yellow dog as long as he was a Democrat. And they just about got a yellow dog with the globalist Woodrow Wilson. And when America got involved, they turned the tide of battle so that the Germans, who were basically rolling to victory, lost World War One. We were pouring 250,000 new, fresh troops into the Western Front every month in the year 1918, and that's what turned the tide of battle. Germany had won on the Russian Front. they'd won in Romania, they'd won in Italy, and they were destined to either defeat the French and the British or reach a negotiated peace, which probably would have been, at the very least, neutral and more probably favorable to Germany. The German monarchy and aristocracy would have stayed in power. We would never have heard of Adolf Hitler. He would have been hoisting a Stein at the local equivalent of a VFW post in Germany, toasting General Ludendorff, General Hindenburg, and the Kaiser, and never would have gotten involved in politics. But meddling in the affairs of Europe basically upset the balance of power, and that upsetting led directly to World War II. The vengeful French were able to dictate the terms at Versailles, and they had, quite frankly, their vengefulness was pretty understandable since 4 out of 5 Frenchmen between the ages of 18 and 25 had been killed in the war. There was this interlude in history where French women got the reputation for being loose. Well, they were looking for husbands because their normal husband supply had been seriously depleted by World War I, and French were vengeful, but they would have been defeated and powerless but for the United States intervention in World War I. So, you know, and furthermore, there would have been no intervention in World War I if the United States had split in two in the Civil War and the Confederacy had become a separate nation. The Confederacy followed much more closely than the new northern-dominated federal government the principles of the founders of the United States, like those of George Washington, who in his farewell address said that the clearest and surest way to destroy the Republic was to grant favored nation status to any foreign nation, back then it was Britain, or to engage in the fighting of foreign wars. Now, the South believed in that. We wouldn't have gotten involved. And I really don't think that the United States, the diminished northern United States that would have existed had the South prevailed in the Civil War, would have managed to make that type of a dent or cast that much influence into World War I. What do you think, James?
Keith, what you say certainly stands to reason, and I enjoyed your hypothesis immensely. And as I was listening to you, I was thinking to myself, you know, what show on the political cesspool will you hear sensible ideas like this put forth? And of course, as always, I draw a blank. But you know, folks, you're getting a taste, I guess you could say, of Confederate History Month. I might early here in the first hour, as I said at the top of the show. The second hour of each and every broadcast during the month of April is going to be dedicated to the South and all things Confederate, so stay tuned for that. That's just a little teaser of some things you can expect, and of course we'll be diving into Confederate history itself, not what the world may have looked like if we had won, but the actual people who made the history there for the South, and it's going to be a fun four-week series here on the Political Cesspool. But Keith, before we get into that, there was an article that caught your attention on the American Renaissance website this week. If you can recall it from the top of your head, I'd like for you to explain to the audience why you thought it noteworthy.
Well, it was on Monday, and it was the first article, and it basically was a group of leftist educators, some group, bemoaning the fact that they are, you know, bound and determined to ignore, under most circumstances, which is the academic talent differential between white and Asian students on one hand and black, Hispanic, and American Indian students on the other. They said, we've got to come to terms with the fact that there's this incredible gulf between the academic achievement of these two groups, whites and Asians on one hand and blacks, Hispanics, and American Indians on the other. And of course, they didn't conclude that this is just Mother Nature at work and that different people have different talents. No, something like that, you know, that they're never willing to accept Mother Nature on her own terms or reality on its own terms. They said, we will spare nothing until we close this gap. Well, folks, they have spared nothing, and they have done it for over 70 years now, and they keep coming up with the same results. You just can't, you know, I think it was the Roman poet Horace who said, you can drive Mother Nature out with a pitchfork, but she always hastens back, Jay.
Well, Keith, I was at Jerry Snowcone's earlier tonight before I drove down to the radio station with my family. You know Jerry's, of course. And I was listening. The line's always long at Jerry's. It's a Memphis institution. And I was listening to a group of teenagers behind me talking about what they were studying in school. And it was just... I'll tell you when we come back. I'll tell you when we come back, folks. Stay tuned. This is a good story. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson, and it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you can take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here on the Political Cesspool radio program. Keith was talking about an article. I guess, Keith, the basic premise of the article was that it was lamenting the fact that there is still no equality in terms of intelligence, that despite the billions of dollars the liberal do-gooders have pumped into bringing everyone to the same level, it just hasn't occurred yet. So I guess now the the process is, if they can't make everybody as smart as one another, they can try to bring the smart people down to make everybody as dumb as each other. And I got a glimpse of that tonight when I was in line at Snow Cone Place, and the high schoolers behind me were talking, not the high schoolers, talking about, you know, what they had learned during Black History Month, which, of course, was in February, and the projects they did to that extent. One of the kids, you know, not even old enough to smoke a cigarette, was talking about a report they had to write on the legalization of medical marijuana. You know, but nothing at all in terms of hard science, hard, you know, mathematics, anything that, you know, would actually help you succeed in life or in a career. Just, you know, politically correct items being put forth as education.
Well, you know, politically correct education is basically worthless education. And in the context of Confederate History Month and the Civil War, think about the panoply of black heroes in the antebellum American period that they keep throwing up to us as being exemplars that we should all, you know, worship and rever, such as Sojourner Truth or Harriet Tubman or Frederick Douglass. This is like trying to make a significant political hero out of this drunk we used to have in downtown Memphis called Dancing Jimmy, okay? You know, Sojourner Truth was a seriously mentally ill person, okay? Harriet Tubman was an inconsolable societal malcontent. So was Frederick Douglass. And they're trying to manufacture these people into being significant players and formers of opinion in antebellum America. And I guarantee you, if you get in a time machine and travel back to antebellum America, you would travel far and wide before you found anyone in the North or the South that had heard of any of these people, much less, you know, hung with bated breath to hear what their pronouncements were on the society of the day. You know,
that was my point in bringing up the what I had seen today is that, you know, these people probably couldn't do long division or multiplication. They can't name the capital of Tennessee, or they don't know how many senators there are, or who the vice president is, or anything like this. But I bet you they could write a long report on Frederick Douglass. And by the way, you mentioned Frederick Douglass and some of these people, Harriet Tubman. This is something that Wilburn Sprayberry is going to be addressing with us during the next hour, how these people have become heroes. And not just people like that, but true American terrorists like John Brown, how these people have become revered in contemporary history and contemporary politics, while people like Robert E. Lee, probably the greatest Christian man, the greatest American Christian man that there ever was, has been denigrated as nothing more than just, you know, someone who fought to preserve slavery, which is, you know, preposterous.
And see, that's the linchpin for all of this revisionist history that we're getting from the left, the idea that the Civil War was all about slavery. Of course, the historical record flies in the face of that notion, but why let the truth get in the way of a good fable? The left has to use the Civil War as a teaching tool to elevate non-whites and to degrade whites. That's their secret agenda for everything they do. And quite frankly, if you focus on the real causes of the Civil War, rather than this invented cause, slavery, then it's no longer a teachable moment for the left.
Well, we're going to read in the second hour a quote that Robert E. Lee himself had about slavery, but in talking about Lee and compared to some of these people who are now presented to us as American heroes, and true American heroes like Lee and Davis and Jackson and Forrest, you know, have been just cast aside as garbage.
McClellan, none of these people, you know, there are people on both sides. McClellan, for example, is vastly underappreciated today, but he, unlike either U.S. Grant, William Tecumseh Sherman, or Abraham Lincoln, was a noble man who wanted to minimize bloodshed. And, of course, with the pacifist leanings that the left professes to hold, you would think that McClellan would be held up as an exemplar. Instead, he's nothing. You know, the only Union leaders that are held up for deification by the left are the most bloodthirsty and ruthless of the bunch.
You can call us live radio, folks, and that we're going unrehearsed tonight because we promised you we were going to contain Confederate history until the second hour so it doesn't take over the whole show. Not that it could metastasize as if it were a bad thing, but you can see our eagerness and perhaps a little overzealousy.
Well, quite there's little enough time to talk about it, and it is a key foundational element of understanding America today. As William Faulkner said, the past isn't history, it isn't even past. So,
and here's one thing I wanted to bring up, Keith, about Lee, though, before we... And this is actually going to save, make some more time for our guests this second hour. We're getting through a couple of the things I wanted to present to open up a little more time for the things he might want to bring to the program. But Robert E. Lee, I want you to think about this one thing, folks. I mean, the only cadet to ever graduate West Point, the nation's premier military institution, without a single demerit, and he was a Christian man if there ever was one. But compare him to politicians today, even like Rand Paul. Rand Paul has completely abandoned any principle he claimed to have had. Now we see how he has said, I think this week, that the GOP should abandon the thought of deportation. See, a guy like Sheldon Adelson, the Jewish fat cat who bankrolls both sides of the coin up there in D.C., you know, he's offered him enough money, and people like him have offered Paul enough money. He completely abandons his principles. But compare guys like Rand Paul, who some of our people would say is somebody worth considering a vote for, to Robert E. Lee, who was presented by Abraham Lincoln himself with the opportunity to command the Union Army. He turned down the command of the Union Army to fight for his state of Virginia, based on principle, knowing that he was probably going to a losing side. But because it was the right thing to do, he turned down all the honor and power and glory that his position with the Union would have afforded him in terms of history's sake. And I'll tell you what, for that, I get chills even talking about that, Keith, because men of principle like that do not exist anymore. Men like that...
Well, you know, it existed on both sides, too. You know, I'm sure that if the federal government had proposed to invade Massachusetts, Daniel Webster would have sided with Massachusetts. That's just the way antebellum Americans thought. They thought that the states were paramount and were the source of sovereignty, and that the federal government was secondary. Unfortunately, it was Abraham Lincoln that turned the federal government into the Leviathan that it is today.
Hey, Keith, I'm telling you the truth, and I'm telling the audience to chills as I talk about that one instance of honor that Lee, and that was just one of any hundreds we could draw from, you know, people like Robert E. Lee, but literally chills as I spoke came down my arm. I mean, what happened, and I ask this question rhetorically from time to time on the show, but what happened, Keith, to the nation that used to produce men like that?
Well, what's happened to the world that used to produce men like that, okay? It's incredible.
Tell me.
What has happened to the world, quite frankly, is the rise of liberalism, the rise and triumph of liberalism, which has adulterated all of the accomplishments of Western man and is bringing us down, like you said, it's dumbing us down to the level of the third world. And
what's sad is that, you know, these kids that I saw today, we were talking, you know, we actually found a way to get back into this from your original topic at the top of this segment, which was, or the last segment rather, about how, you know, they haven't been able to bring everyone together in terms of intelligence and IQ and so on and so forth, but they can sure as hell dumb people down. And, you know, these kids will never know who Robert E. Lee was. If they even know his name at all, which is unlikely, they'll know him as a racist.
This is, it's heroes and villains, and anybody that strikes a blow for white Gentiles is going to be vilified. Anybody who does their best to undermine them is going to be deified.
Well, but it doesn't even have to go to that, because, I mean, certainly if you read some of the things that Lincoln said about blacks, who he was supposedly the great savior of, I mean, it was far more racist than anything we've ever said in our lives, you know, as far as the modern-day definition of racism is concerned, of course. But nevertheless, the fact remains is that if we are the last people to defend the honor of people whose honor deserves to be defended, then we will be the last one. There is one network that has a program that celebrates Confederate History Month on the mainstream AM/FM airwaves, and this, you're listening to it, folks, and it's just another reason why this show is so worthy of support and why our work must be continued. We only get to do this once a year. Right. You know, certainly every month is Confederate History Month, and every month we should revere these people who fought for their families and fought to defend their states. You know, as Jackson mentioned, you know, the triumph of the North will be the triumph of federal tyranny and the banks and so on and so forth. These people deserve, you know, commemoration 365 days a year. But for one month of the year, we certainly make a point to go out of our, not go out of our way, but to do it.
Well, we're the last of the Mohicans, James. We're the last people fighting a rear guard action. But you know what? It's the truth. And you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That's what we believe here at the Political Cesspool. Now, well, it's really interesting. It's interesting to know that Emmy Bradford was denied the headship of the National Endowment for Humanities for saying some things about Lincoln that were obviously true. These negative things you're talking about. Now the left has embraced them and turned it to their advantage. We'll talk about that after this break and word from our sponsor.